Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you here today. Got some guests later in the program, and I have some news. Apparently, it has been rumored that Jane Silk herself will be hosting next week, so we'll see how that plays out. But in the meantime, the Silk or Joe Show is a Main Street Radio Network production, so we want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist, even though management sometimes disagrees with the content, especially some of their clients disagree with content. They still support us, so we want to thank them. Also want to thank the Salem Radio Network as well. Silk or Joe Show in its 10th year now, as a matter of fact, in one form or another, most of that time being hosted by Jane Silk, either as the full host or the co-host with someone else. So give credit where credit's due on that one. Jane Silk herself, being a veteran radio broadcaster, this wasn't her first program. She'd had a couple before then, even owned a few radio stations. So you will be with the voice of experience next week when she comes around, assuming she is able to fit this in her schedule. Very busy person. Anyway, we also want to give you our social media attention here. Main Street Radio Network, you know, it's at mainstreetradionetwork.com, but they're on social media, and you'll find, in fact, posts from Jane Silk up there on Facebook, their Facebook page, at Main Street Radio Network. But also, the Silk, or you can also find Main Street Radio Network, that is on Twitter, at Main Street Radio. And then the Silk or Joe Show is on Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show. Of course, I've got to throw out a pitch for the Alan Nathan Show. Sometimes I guest host for them. They can be found at AlanNathan.com or on Twitter at Alan Nathan. And, you know, if you want to know when I'm guest hosting, again, you can, I usually remember at some point to tell you all on Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show, if I'm hosting for Alan that day or not. Anyway, got a lot of topics that I want to ram into here. We'll start out with one that just popped in my inbox a moment ago, really. So, I guess this is that headline potluck situation that I've mentioned before that we do, where I just bounce between headlines until one catches my attention for the whole segment. So the UNC, University of North Carolina, their medical school, it has decided that, you know what, we don't really need to have doctors actually be good at their jobs. As point of fact, merit is hateful. Hateful is the word that they use to describe merit. Their director of surgery at the University of North Carolina's medical school, their director of surgery said merit is hateful. You know, the guy who trains doctors on how to operate on people, he says merit is hateful. In other words, it doesn't matter if you know a gallbladder from the uvula, you still get to pass this course because racism. So make sure, if you're going to have a surgery done, I guess, that they don't come from University of North Carolina, because they have gone full in on woke there. And actually, they also have decided that black students can't handle lectures. That's what their DEI, Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Task Force at the University of North Carolina decided. Black people cannot actually handle lectures. It's crazy how this all happens. So I'm just, the racism inherent behind that assumption is staggering, but it also will lead to more racism down the line, because you're going to have people saying, well, if black students can't handle lectures, then obviously they're not going to be qualified to handle actual doctoring when it comes to that. So now people will be judging their doctors based on the color of their skin, because University of North Carolina has decided, hey, we don't have to actually educate doctors or anything on how to do it. We just gotta pass them along, make sure that they're just give them a diploma, and that's it. Just call them a doctor in name. You know, might as well just legally change your name to doctor, and you'll be just as qualified as these people that they're passing at University of North Carolina. And they've just decided that for the sake of wokeness, labeling someone as a doctor is all you have to do. And none of the people who are making these policies will actually be affected. They have their own private physicians who graduate from prestigious universities. You know, they'll make sure to steer clear of any of these folks here that are graduating from the University of North Carolina's medical school. You might not have that luxury. You might be stuck with some guy who never attended a lecture and was just given the title doctor and really is not qualified to operate on anything, not even qualified to dissect a frog in a high school biology class. But that's what you get for putting wokeness over qualifications. And they're not the only medical school doing it. We've talked before about medical school hospital systems going on about wokeness over qualification. Just me, I guess that's why I'm happy I don't pay for health insurance, you know, because I'm not going to bother going to a hospital. I'm going to be dead on arrival. Because another thing that they're teaching too at University of North Carolina and other medical schools is to prioritize race over treating the injury, you know. So if you have, I don't know, a black person with a hangnail, according to University of North Carolina, that person will deserve treatment more than a white person who's missing a leg, you know. That's what they're telling their students. Don't treat your patients based on severity of injury. Treat them based on, I guess, severity of race. And then on top of that, they also tell them to view and treat patients based on their race. In other words, ignore behaviors that might be causing the patient's illness. For example, in the black community, it's been known for decades. I saw an episode of Good Times where they talked about it. And you know, that's a show from the 70s where heart disease has just been rampant because of certain dietary restrictions, lifestyle choices that are made in the black community. Excessive fried foods, pork fat, and all that sort of thing. So that has led to an increase in heart disease among African Americans. Like I said, it's been going on for over 50 years now. So what's the solution here? The University of North Carolina is just telling the students, you know what, just ignore what they're doing and tell them to keep doing what they're doing that's unhealthy and let them have even more bigger burdens of medical expenses later on down the road as these unhealthy lifestyles eventually conclude in very unhealthy people later on. So not only are they actively making sure that doctors are incompetent, they're actively making sure patients are harmed by all this, by this incompetence, not getting the best advice, not getting any good advice. So even the doctors who may actually have merit or who may actually pass these classes and attend the lectures, they're still not being given good information. So I guess maybe it actually works out that the black students who can't handle lectures, according to the University of North Carolina, maybe it works out that they're not attending them, because if they did attend them, they'd get terrible information anyway. Probably do better off just buying a biology textbook from 1950 and going from there. You, despite the medical advances in the last 70 years, you'd still learn more than you would at the University of North Carolina's medical school. And again, this is not the only medical school that's prioritizing this wokeness over actual treating of patients and all of that. In California, researchers right now are suggesting that medical students be segregated by race. How do you do that? Well, not how do you do that. That's very easy. They did that for quite some time. In fact, until the Supreme Court ruled that you shouldn't be doing that. What I mean to say is, how does that lead to a doctor who can treat patients properly? White doctors for white patients? Black doctors for black patients? Well, that's even more of a disservice for the black community, because if the University of North Carolina is to be believed, black students can't handle lectures. So if you say black doctors for only black patients, then that means those black patients aren't able to get the best care and aren't going to get the best care because these students didn't bother to learn anything while they were medical students, and now they're out there pretending to be doctors. And the only reason they were graduated is because it was decided, oh, you know, there's a dearth of black doctors out there, so we're just going to graduate these people and slap degrees on them and hope for the best, which you're not going to get, not at all. Maybe one or two will actually try to be good for their community once they see the suffering that they cause by their incompetence, but I doubt it. And boy, will this lead to malpractice lawsuits. Or will it? Will they be thrown out because on the grounds of, I don't know, race or whatever? We'll have to see how this develops, but it is alarming that this has gained such incredible traction in the medical schools of this country. This idea that people need to be handled special because of their race, that competence doesn't matter, that merit is hateful. And again, the University of North Carolina's director of surgery is not the first person to say that merit is hateful. We've talked before about other medical schools who say that merit should be banned and all of that. Actually, it was this, the whatever coalition of medical schools it is, that their lobbying group or whatever that decided, you know what, meritocracy is hateful, hurtful, whatever. We don't want the best of the best. We just want racial quotas to be filled. That's of course, like I said, anyone who's saying that, they're not going to be at the receiving end of the scalpel. It's going to be you who's going to have to suffer at the hands of an incompetent doctor who shouldn't have been given a medical degree, who probably shouldn't have even been let into medical school, but who has graduated just because they checked off all the right boxes. You know, like I said before, I don't think the trans patient out there who's getting a sex reassignment surgery really cares that their doctor is woke. I think they care that their doctor can actually do the surgery right, but of course, that's not what the medical schools are being taught, and now we're all going to suffer for it, again, except for the ones who are actually making this happen, because they have enough money to go to the competent doctors. More Silker Joshua after this.
This message is provided by Boehringer Ingelheim. Idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF, is one of the more common forms of progressive fibrosing interstitial lung diseases, with symptoms including breathlessness during activity, a dry and persistent cough, chest discomfort, fatigue, and weakness. There are more than 200 lung disorders that can lead to pulmonary fibrosis, an irreversible scarring of lungs that can negatively impact lung function, quality of life, and may become life-threatening. While approved treatments for people living with these diseases can help slow disease progression, new therapies are needed to help potentially stop progression. Fortunately, there is new research underway to assess the safety and efficacy of an investigational treatment in patients with IPF and other progressive ILDs. This is part of Boehringer Ingelheim's Phase 3 Global Fibrinear Program. To learn more about Fibrinear and eligibility requirements, visit fibrinear-ipf.longboat.com and fibrinear-ild.longboat.com.
Spring is here. Time to get out of the gym and take your workout outdoors. Whether you're walking, running, swimming, or biking, it's important to have a proper warm-up routine to prevent injuries. Five-time Ironman triathlon world champion Craig Crowe Alexander has some advice.
Sprains, strains, and injuries can happen to any athlete. Even a minor injury can affect your performance and derail your fitness routine. One of the best ways to try and prevent injuries is to make sure you prepare properly.
Alexander recommends always starting with a 10 to 15 minute dynamic warm-up.
Activation exercises combined with some dynamic movements like lunges are great for warming up. Focus on one specific movement at a time until you feel ready to go. Be sure to listen to your body and use proper support gear when needed to protect yourself and prevent injury.
The Curad Performance Series Ironman lineup includes rugged supports, wraps, kinesiology tape, bandages, and analgesics to support you on your fitness journey. For more, go to Curad.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Adopt US Kids presents multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve, it's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. We are joined right now by John Hayward, National Security Deputy Editor with Breitbart News, and he is a frequent guest host for the Alan Nathan Show as well, so always appreciate that from him when his schedule allows that. John, happy to have you today. How are you?
Great to be talking to you.
All right, so at least talking to me for as long as you can, because there's that alleged drone attack on Russia, and now some Russian officials are talking about possible nuclear retaliation. Again, another excuse for escalation in this whole conflict. What's going on here?
Well, it's also very suspicious. I mean, here we have something that was caught on video exploding over the Kremlin dome. Russia says it's an assassination attempt on President Vladimir Putin, and that not only were the Ukrainians involved, but so was the United States, that this was a U.S.-sanctioned Ukrainian-executed hit attempt on the Russian president. Most people looking at that footage find that very implausible. There's a lot of questions about that drone. How did it get there? How did it slip right past their air defenses? Why did it explode over the Kremlin rather than on top of it? And the explosion didn't look like a very impressive blast, certainly not enough to jeopardize potentially President Putin's life. So it has a lot of the hallmarks of a false flag operation, and the Russians are known for doing this. Putin in particular came to power with a false flag staged terrorist attack many years ago. So this is definitely part of his repertoire. But the Russians are treating this like it was a legit U.S. assassination attempt, and they're howling for blood. Russian hardliners are saying they need to escalate the war, consider attacking American targets, assassinate the Ukrainian president. It's looking like, at the very least, it will be an excuse for some kind of escalation.
Now, why are the Russians interested in escalating it like this? Is it just because they've been really failing at the tactics they've used so far, so they're looking for an excuse to justify using more extreme weapons?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the existing strategy is not really working out for them, and they haven't been shy about committing war crimes, inflicting civilian casualties. They've been absolutely brutal. So it's not really like they've been wearing kid gloves here, but the casualties are piling up to an incredible degree. Russia on May 9th celebrates a national holiday called Victory Day, which is the victory over the Nazis in World War II. And they usually have a procession called the Immortal Regiment, where people walk around with pictures of their loved ones who died in World War II. It's a big event in Russia. Putin usually participates and carries a picture and walks around with them. But they canceled it this year, and they said they had to cancel it because of Ukrainian security threats. But the real reason, many observers suspect, is they're afraid people are going to start marching around with pictures of the dead from Ukraine instead of their World War II fathers, grandfathers that fell fighting the Nazis, that people are going to hit the streets carrying pictures of their brothers and husbands and sons that died in Putin's war in Ukraine, and it would become a gigantic embarrassment to the regime.
So, I guess this really false flag is a great excuse for them on several fronts. Not only does it give them a reason to increase their presence in Ukraine and increase the severity of the war and the weapons used, but it also gives them a reason to avoid this parade, which could have been a public embarrassment.
Absolutely. And also to crack down on dissent in general. Anybody who speaks up against the war effort is now going to be accused even more stridently of being a traitor who's cooperating with the people that tried to murder Putin, blah, blah, blah. No doubt they're going to arrest a whole lot of people that they're going to claim are involved in this plot to blow up the Kremlin with the drones. I mean, it's a pretty convenient excuse for a massive crackdown.
Mm-hmm. Now, as much as this looks like a false flag, is there any way we'd ever know for certain one way or the other what it is? Because doesn't the Ukraine, if they do something like this, usually try to take credit for it?
Well, Ukraine is funny that way. They don't usually come out and claim credit for aggressive strikes beyond their own territory, but they usually kind of wink and nod, and they post little funny things on Twitter, and officials will kind of celebrate that it happened, but they won't really come right out and say, we did this. They'll just say, boy, it's a shame your fuel depot blew up there. Too bad. So that's kind of their typical attitude, and they really aren't doing that with this. There was one Ukrainian official who posted some kind of a tweet that acted like he was happy that the Kremlin almost blew up. He deleted it right away, and none of the others are acting that way. So the Ukrainians are not doing what they usually do when they do manage to conduct some kind of strike that hurts the Russians on their own soil.
So definitely a strong evidence that this is just a false flag. It does everything to benefit Russia, nothing to benefit the conflict, nothing to really help the Ukrainians, and they're not taking credit for it in the way they usually do. But where does it go from here then with Russia's escalation? What do they expect to happen if they escalate? Do they expect the West to just roll over? Are they aware of the risk of a nuclear war if they keep us up?
Well, that is the ultimate act of escalation, the use of tactical nuclear weapons. And if you're of a really gloomy mindset, you might say that if Russia is setting the stage to get even more harsh in Ukraine, this is almost certainly what they would be setting the stage for. They've tried everything else. It isn't working. It's a quagmire. So the next step for them would be to escalate to something like a tactical nuclear strike and then say they had to. And one of the reasons they would say they had to is because the Ukrainians tried to assassinate Putin and are conducting terrorist attacks all over Russia and so on. So that would be the most grim interpretation of what's happening.
Mm-hmm. And I read the other day that the U.S. sent a team over to Ukraine, or was getting ready to, a team of experts who, you know, are trained in determining if a nuclear weapon has been used. Is that preemptive, or is it that Russia, they actually know something we don't?
Well, yeah, you have to wonder about that. I think it's mostly preemptive, but it really is not irrational to say that Russia is at least considering that option, and you need your pieces in place in case they do something like that. The whole world changes if they cook off a nuke in Ukraine, and we really want them to know that we're serious about monitoring that, detecting it. If they tried to do it and make it a false flag, we would want to let them know you can't get away with that. You can't set off a nuke and blame it on the Ukrainians. We won't let you do that. So those are signals you got to send. You really want to let them know that is not a good option for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, while we got 2 minutes left, I want to segue into this other article that you have. And listeners, if you want to check it out, he's at Breitbart.com/author/John-Hayward. Plenty of great articles there. But another one that he wrote is titled Reporters Without Borders Ranks Namibia, East Timor Higher Than U.S. for Press Freedom Under Biden, which is interesting because we're supposed to be at war to save democracy in Ukraine. Putin's this tyrant using these false flags to crack down on the press, yet our press seems to have less freedom than Namibia and East Timor.
And we're sliding. The report, which is the annual press freedom index that Reporters Without Borders publishes, that said we slipped 3 places in press freedom under Joe Biden. And the very first paragraph of that report struggles mightily to not blame Joe Biden. It says, oh, it's not his fault. He loves the press. But that is kind of the problem. Everything they're talking about in terms of declining press freedom in the U.S. is not reporters being arrested or executed or any such thing. It's media outlets losing their viewership, losing public trust, going out of business. That's media fault. That's Joe Biden's fault. That's a sycophantic media in line with the ruling party, which is every bit as much a threat to press freedom as an authoritarian regime throwing reporters in jail. And I think press freedom advocates need to accept that.
Right. This is the same kind of media that a tyrannical regime would just love to have. If Putin had a media like ours that was as loyal as ours is to the Democrat Party, he probably wouldn't have had to do this false flag.
Right. And the story right now in the media, the big media bias story, is this ridiculous coordinated smear campaign to destroy Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, which is pure party media collusion. It's obvious. It's blatantly obvious. It's nothing but that. And it's just so in your face. And I wonder how any credible advocate of press freedom could not see that that is a real problem for the liberty of journalists, for good reporting around the world, every bit as much as an authoritarian punishing journalists for writing stories they don't like.
Right. And while they're trying to smear Clarence Thomas for something fictitious, they're ignoring the very real evidence that Joe Biden may have actually had a pay-for-play scheme going when he was vice president.
Right, which is a big part of the loss of trust in the media. You know that they'll lie to you, and you also know that they will refrain from giving you true information that damages political narratives. That is the story of declining journalism in America today.
All right, John Hayward, National Security Deputy Editor with Breitbart News. Appreciate you being on the Silker Joe Show. Listeners, got more after this break.
The pandemic is just one factor that forced companies to rethink the way they conduct business. In addition to remote employees, companies are uploading more data to the cloud, and workers are using a wide variety of apps and devices. As a result, businesses are more susceptible to security breaches than ever before. For 10 years, the Open Directory platform provider JumpCloud has helped businesses improve security and minimize vulnerability. Security continues to be a top concern for businesses. According to JumpCloud Vice President Eric Brown, organizations need to reconsider their approach.
Identity is the new center of IT and the foundation around which all IT infrastructure should be built. That's where we at JumpCloud come in. We help companies and people make work happen with secure, frictionless access to the apps and data they need with an open directory platform designed for identity transformation.
To learn how JumpCloud can help your business, visit jumpcloud.com.
Vitamin B12 is important for supporting not only our metabolism, but also our energy levels. Our brain and our nerves need certain vitamins like B12 in order to function properly. Even if you're eating all the healthy foods like fruits and vegetables and getting, you know, great sources of protein, it's sometimes the case that you can become deficient in one or more nutrient, and that's where supplements can be helpful. So if you want to support your B12 levels, Jarrow's methyl B12 is a great supplement to consider to optimize your B12 levels. This type of B12 is recognized by the body, so it's delivered to your cells more efficiently. It's also been shown that it is a great way to make sure that you're getting a highly absorbed form of vitamin B12 and one that's going to be retained better than other types of B12. You can learn more at jarrow.com.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Right, welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Well, at first I wanted to say get ready for more riots, but you know, I'm not so sure, because the riots we had in response to George Floyd kind of came after people had been cooped up in their houses under the quarantine. It was like the only excuse to get out, and it was also in one of the rare occasions where anarchy was permitted. Of course, that's nowadays we are almost numb to anarchy in our streets, right? Which actually is the genesis of this story. So what happened was there was an act of self-defense in New York City, but the only thing Democrats would see is a white dude choking a black man to death. But here's what happened. Homeless guy who police have assault charges on had already committed battery on passengers on a subway train when a bystander got him in a chokehold because the guy was a raving lunatic and seemed to be threatening the passengers. Now, chokeholds are generally non-lethal. We're not talking about what happened to George Floyd kneeling on his neck. We're talking about a basic chokehold. You know, you'll see it in wrestling plenty of times. It's not supposed to be lethal. Usually it isn't. In fact, it's a standard defense tactic that's taught. But this one actually killed the homeless guy. Much like George Floyd, his neck muscles were and lung air passageways were all worn out from opioid abuse. Who knows? But the point is, what ended up happening is white dude seen choking black man. That's all anyone's going to see. So, of course, Democrats are mad. If the homeless guy had gone on to beat up and rape the women in the train car with him, Democrats would not care. But if you save people by accidentally killing him because his drug addict can't support a chokehold, well, time to riot. George Floyd all over again. You know, we live in a country where criminals have more rights than law-abiding citizens, it seems. Gee whiz, liberals talk about gun control, yet routinely liberal prosecutors will reduce charges in gun crimes so that criminals are allowed to keep their guns. In fact, Alvin Bragg is the district attorney for where the chokehold incident occurred. He's saying that's a homicide. This is the same Alvin Bragg who thinks that pointing a gun in someone's face and demanding their money means you should keep that firearm so you can repeat the offense in the future as many times as you care to, because it's only a misdemeanor to him. And you're out on the street, you don't even, no bail even for that. You're out on the street the next day to take your gun and point it at someone else and keep repeating as much as you can to get as much money as you can. That's how Alvin Bragg sees armed robbery. So what if it's a risk of someone being killed? Who cares? Let him keep the gun and take the money. But someone tries to subdue a guy who is going insane on a subway car and threatening the passengers? Nope. That's homicide right there. It's just this idea that Democrats have that the offender is innocent while the people acting in self-defense are guilty. It's the new norm among Democrats. We saw that with Kyle Rittenhouse, for example, where first, all Kyle Rittenhouse did was try to clean up some damage that the rioters caused, which apparently is death penalty as far as Democrats are concerned. Democrats to this day believe that Kyle Rittenhouse should have been murdered for trying to clean up after what the rioters were doing. Okay, I've been seeing their comments to that effect, so I tell you that's what they believe. So we're seeing that as well in Austin, Texas. I've mentioned this on the show before, where a liberal put a gun in a conservative's face and the conservative shot him in self-defense. Of course, if someone puts a rifle in your face, an assault weapon, mind you, wouldn't you want to stop him from shooting you? I certainly would. Well, Democrats decided that that conservative acting in self-defense against an assault weapon that was in his face was the bad guy, not the Democrat who was pointing the gun, rather the conservative. Basically, the judge and jury and prosecutor in that case figured it should be legal to murder conservatives in Austin, Texas. That seems to be the case now. Luckily, Governor Greg Abbott was able to look into issuing a pardon for this guy. It would have been horrible if it was allowed to continue that you cannot defend yourself if you're a conservative. Open season on conservatives in Austin, Texas. And then there's this trans issue, another case where the offender is put over the victim. If a man wants to claim to be a woman just so they can assault women in women's spaces, that's okay. It's the women who need to adjust to the new norm that they will be raped. In fact, Biden's Department of Justice right now is paying trans rapists $1 million settlements as they continue to rape, because criminals are the new victim class. We should punish them. We should feel sorry for them and let them hurt us. After all, possessions can be replaced. And if they beat you up or rape you, so what? You'll forget about it. The wounds will heal. All is forgive and forget. Because if you don't, Democrats will do much worse to you. They will cancel you and your life and your livelihood and your ability to make any money and survive. They want to see you out on the street dying if you dare to resist their special criminal victim group. Now, as far as what I was talking about with the Department of Justice paying off the trans rapists, here's what's going on. These male sex offenders, male rapists, male violent offenders, and just male inmates in prisons in general, they're declaring themselves trans. And then they are suing the Department of Justice for endangering their lives by putting them in the men's prison. So the Department of Justice is settling these lawsuits out of court for millions of dollars. Meanwhile, these people bringing the lawsuits, these inmates who bring the lawsuits, they are transferred to women's prisons where they go on to rape the female inmates. And as I said, some of them are already convicted sex offenders and convicted rapists. They just come in, declare that they're male, or declare that they're female. They get transferred to a women's prison. They rape the inmates there. And then the Biden administration pays them $1 million settlement for having misgendered them and endangered them by putting them in the male prison in the first place. Rather sick and twisted, don't you think? But again, it's up to the women to stomach all this, to have these male rapists in their spaces who were just given $1 million settlements. That's quite empowering. And the Biden administration, they did say that if you're a mass shooter and you're trans, then the Biden administration has your back. So I guess raping is another thing that the Biden administration supports. Why not? If your life doesn't matter, then surely your personal body doesn't matter either. That's the message that the Biden administration has sent in regards to the trans community. And for those of you who are not longtime listeners, why I'm referring to this particular incident is right after the Nashville shooting, where the trans shooter shot up a school and the trans community started saying, oh, she just did that because she wanted to be heard. The Biden administration said that they support any trans person who fights, like the mass shooter was being characterized as having done. So very upside-down world we have, where if you point a gun in someone's face and demand all their money, it's okay. That's the person gets to keep their gun and everything. And where if you decide to defend yourself from any of this, you're the criminal. If you protect yourself from a trans rapist, you're the criminal. If you protect yourself from a liberal with a gun in your face, you're the criminal. That's how Democrats see the world. And it's really hard to say that it's not why this sickness is not widespread in the party, because they keep voting for this sort of thing. They keep supporting it. Where's the pushback on the Democrat Party if they don't like any of this, right? In fact, it was 12 Democrat jurors in Austin, Texas, who came to the conclusion that a conservative has no right to self-defense when a liberal decides it's time for them to die. And as I said, the reaction to the Kyle Rittenhouse case, people who actually followed the trial and knew the facts, who are Democrats, said that Rittenhouse should have been convicted because it was murder that he dared to defend himself. He shouldn't have been allowed to defend himself. He should have just been killed right there in the street. So, and then, of course, the case of District Attorney Alvin Bragg, which I've mentioned before, where Democrat voters actually elected this guy on his platforms that pointing guns in people's faces is okay. And he's going to get reelected after this, after deciding that if you protect yourselves and passengers from some lunatic, then, well, you know what? You deserve murder charges, buddy, because you should have just been let that man beat you up, let that man rape passengers, let that man do whatever the hell he wanted to, and then never have him face justice for his actions. The criminals own the justice system right now. And Democrats keep voting for people who believe that criminals have more of a right than you do, the law-abiding citizen. You have no rights as far as the Democrats are concerned. Unless you become a criminal, in which case they will be your biggest supporter. So long as you are a Democrat, I might add. There is that big, big caveat right there. Because this is the same Democrat Party that says no one is above the law when they try to prosecute Trump under all sorts of bogus, phony, baloney charges. And Alvin Bragg himself said no one is above the law when he went after Trump. The same Alvin Bragg who says you don't have a right to defend yourself. The same Alvin Bragg who says a man has a right to put a gun in your face and demand your money. That's okay if they do it. They have a right to do that to you. That's Alvin Bragg's position. Yet he says no one's above the law, at least when it comes to Republicans. I guess no one's above the Democrat law, because that seems to be the law of the land now that we have all these Soros prosecutors, all these activist judges, and all these crappy district attorneys out there. It seems that the real law is whatever Democrats say it is, which is if you're a conservative, and this goes up to the FBI and Department of Justice, by the way. We saw that when they sent an armed team to drag Mark Houck out of his house just because he yelled at a pro-abortion activist. That's all it takes to have the Department of Justice send the feds to your house and point guns in your face. Just yell at one of their activists. That's all. It is the Democrats' justice in this country right now, and it is injustice for all. Folks, more Silker Joe Show after this break.
Spring is here, and there's no better time to try something new. Take a taste of Coke Zero Sugar and enjoy real Coke taste and zero sugar. Now available at participating Burger King restaurants. Try Coke Zero Sugar with your favorite food from Burger King. Satisfy your hunger and enjoy Coke Zero Sugar with a piping hot breakfast sandwich, like a sausage, egg, and cheese croissant sandwich. Sizzling sausage, fluffy eggs, and melted American cheese on a toasted croissant makes for a delicious breakfast to start your morning right. And don't forget the crispy hash browns. Or if the flame-grilled Whopper sandwich, BK Royal crispy chicken sandwich, or chicken fries are your fave, you are in luck. All Burger King menu items pair perfectly with an ice-cold Coke Zero Sugar. It's the perfect no-sugar sparkling beverage that goes great with everything. Take a taste of Coke Zero Sugar to enjoy spring your way at Burger King, where you rule. At participating U.S. Burger King restaurants. Sponsored by Coca-Cola.
This is sponsored by IBM. Job seekers, students, and career changers want to pursue roles in science, technology, engineering, and math, but aren't familiar with career options. At the same time, online training and digital credentials are emerging as a recognized pathway to opportunity. Misconceptions about the cost of training and what's required are often roadblocks to success. To tackle this and bring STEM education closer to underrepresented communities, IBM Skills Build is announcing 45 new educational partners. IBM Skills Build is a free education program focused on underrepresented communities in tech, helping all develop valuable new skills and access to career opportunities. Justina Nixon St. Till, IBM Chief Impact Officer.
Technology training can have a transformational effect on a person's life. IBM is committed to raising awareness of the many roles that exist across industries in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. IBM Skills Build continues to grow with new partners around the world, working together to skill 30 million people by 2030.
For more, skillsbuild.org.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
My baby brother, a father.
Come on, it's time for his nap.
Whoa, he can't sleep on his stomach. Babies should always sleep on their backs in a safety-approved crib, and the sleep area should be clear of blankets, toys, and other loose or soft items. It reduces the risk of SIDS.
SIDS?
You know, sudden infant death syndrome.
Guess I need to start studying up on safe sleep for little man here. Being his favorite uncle comes with big responsibilities.
For more information, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov, sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. You want to give your baby everything, so start with a safe sleep area. Babies younger than one should always be placed to sleep on their backs on a firm and flat surface, like a safety-approved crib. And keep blankets, pillows, and other soft or loose items out of the crib when the baby is in it. Learn more about safe sleep for babies at safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour. We are wrapping up the program with Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, U.S. Army, retired. He is a senior fellow with Defense Priorities. Colonel Davis, appreciate you being on the Silker Joe Show today. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, happy to have you on. So, right now in Russia, they've decided that there was a drone attack on Putin and that it was an assassination attempt that went awry for whatever reason or another. Now, it looks kind of like they're just maybe faking it, especially given how it's not getting the usual reaction that it would if it had actually been a legitimate strike. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I agree with you. This just doesn't seem to pass the smell test exactly. I mean, it is possible that Ukraine actually sent a drone over. Whether it was targeted to actually assassinate Putin is a separate issue, because Ukraine has been launching quite a number of drone strikes into Russian territory. They've been blowing up huge, huge oil depots and fuel storage facilities. They've been blowing up trains and derailing them, military trains, and attacking Russian cities in Belgorod and a Bryansk region on the border with Ukraine. So they have been doing some. So there is some plausibility to it. But I don't think that it was really an attempt to assassinate Putin, because that would not be in Ukraine's favor. They would not be helped by that, because that would just enrage the entire Russian nation, and they might take some pretty stark actions in response if that actually happened. But I do think that Russia would try to take advantage of any kind of a strike, whether it was intended or not, to try and bolster their side and try to make their people, you know, more supportive of what they're doing. And really, both sides are just going to take advantage of this in the information space, because today that's almost as important as what's happening physically on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really doesn't help the case that it is a false flag, that Western leaders and officials have been calling for exactly this sort of thing to happen. I'm just thinking about Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican out of South Carolina, said someone needs to assassinate Putin. I think it was last year he said that. So with like dialogue coming out of the West like that, it makes the false flag like this, if it is one, more believable.
Well, that's exactly right. No, I couldn't agree with you more. I cringed when Senator Graham said that last year. And any kinds of comments like that are just not helpful. I mean, I get it. You know, a lot of people don't like Russia. They blame them for their attack into Ukraine, and they want to force them out. I mean, that's certainly understandable sentiments. But we've got to figure out what is realistically possible here, and how can we end this war as soon as possible to end the absolute carnage that is being suffered by the Ukrainian people. And honestly, I think more importantly, how do we keep our own interests secure, our own safety ensured, and end these, you know, even a lot of the economic factors that are harming our own side? I think that's more important.
Yeah, the people who are hawks on the issue, they seem to ignore the possibility that if this drags on, it will escalate. It has to, because neither side wants to lose. If both sides are stalemating, someone's going to try something desperate.
Well, I mean, that is exactly the concern, you know, because I think that a lot of people, and I'm just being honest here, in the West are actually content if the war goes on for a long time, because in their view, that means Russia will continue to be degraded in their military capacity, and it will make them less of a threat to Western Europe or to NATO itself. And I think that's a really short-sighted and really inaccurate view, because I think that, number one, it comes at the expense of the Ukrainian people and their country, because they're the ones that are physically paying the price for all of this. And Russia over time is going to rebuild its strength because they're continuing with their industrial capacity to greatly expand their ability to make and fix their armored vehicles, to produce, you know, tens of thousands and possibly millions of artillery shells, et cetera. So they're now in a position to actually expand their capacity to wage war. And so over time, that's not going to help us out. And you know, Ukraine, too, on the contrary, doesn't have the capacity over time to match what Russia could do, whether in personnel or in industrial capacity. So that doesn't play well from Ukraine's side, because eventually, if you get into one of these, you know, a stalemate situation or an attrition war, that plays to Russia's advantage, not Ukraine's. And, you know, if we don't do something to end this pretty quick, we may find that later on that Ukraine is forced into a negotiated settlement that's a lot less good than they could get right now.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like the armaments that we're sending are from an infinite, I don't know, gun-creating tree or something like that. We're going to run out of stuff to send them as well.
Yeah, you know, I've actually just been writing on that in just the last day or two and publishing some works on that because we have basically, both the United States and the West in general, have basically given all of the excess and spare stuff that we can afford to give right now. And there's a question of whether we could afford to give as much as we have, because the United States has given literally thousands of mechanized and armored vehicles and, of course, tens of millions of rounds of various kinds of ammunition. And we just don't have that kind of spare capacity sitting around. So we're scrambling trying to replace a lot of that stuff. But here's the thing. The war is not stopping or slowing down. Do we have the capacity to go for another full year of this war at the same level? I mean, where are we going to get thousands of additional armored vehicles? We can't build them that fast. So the only thing you can do is either give them from our operational stocks, which our army requires for its defense, or that we would just say, all right, sorry, Ukraine, we're not going to give it to you. But then that's going to make Russia or give Russia a better chance to actually win on the battlefield. So either way you want to look at it, our strategy and our tactics right now are not helping our own national security, and it's not even really playing a good place for Ukraine.
Yeah, it seems like we just have this sort of blinders on or tunnel vision on the Russia-Ukraine issue if we're doing all this, because now that we've almost ran through our surplus and might be on the verge of giving operational equipment, what are we going to do if China starts getting aggressive? China might be like, hey, this is a great opportunity for us. Everyone's so busy with Ukraine. They just gave away everything they could fight us with. Let's just go take Taiwan.
Yeah, well, as I've been arguing for well over a year, by itself, even without the Russia-Ukraine issue, we are already don't have the military capacity on the sea or in the air, and certainly not on the ground, to have an effective and you know, viable chance to fight a war with Russia, with China over the Taiwan issue. That is a disaster waiting to happen. We should under no circumstances get into a war with that, because we don't have the capacity to win. And all the stuff that's been going on in the Russia-Ukraine side has only exacerbated that, especially with the missiles.
All right, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, appreciate you being on Silker Joe Show today to talk about all this. Again, he is a senior fellow with Defense Priorities. If you want to check out his work and the work of Defense Priorities, you can go ahead, because we are done with you all for today. Appreciate you tuning in. Our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. And of course, if you want to catch us on social media, it is Gitter, GETTR.com at Silker Joe Show. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.